Hey guys, Corey from Redefining Strength. Welcome to the Fitness Hacks Podcast. Muscle stokes our metabolic fire. And often if we focus just more on building muscle, we would end up seeing the fat loss results we wanted even faster. That's why today I want to break down what we can really do to fuel our metabolism, because a lot of times we can think it's broken because of previous dieting practices. The good thing is it isn't broken, but we can have created metabolic adaptations because of overtraining and underfueling. And so I want to go over what you can do to really heal your metabolism. I'm excited to be joined by RS coach Rachel, who's actually gone through the process herself as well. I know I've had my own experiences with it, but we'll really chat about how you can increase your calories, improve your metabolic health, gain that lean muscle, and ultimately eat more and lose fat. So let's first jump in and talk about the mindsets that we need to often embrace if we want to heal our metabolism and see better results faster. It can be really hard to change the mindsets that actually allow us to see better fat loss and weight loss results faster. Because a lot of times what we've always done in the past, it worked for a short amount of time, but it's also why we're now struggling to see the results we really want. So if you think about what we most often do when we want to see weight loss results, right? We cut our calories super low, and then we really deprive ourselves of the food we love. We might see the scale change pretty quickly. We can end up losing weight. We can end up losing fat. And maybe we even hit that goal weight we really wanted to achieve. But then what, right? Ultimately, we often create unsustainable habits. We start to let all the habits that we have created fall by the wayside, and we end up starting to eat more. Now, we might even be thinking, but I'm not eating that much more, and I'm starting to gain weight. And it's because in the weight loss process and slashing our calories super low, we create metabolic adaptations. What this means is that if you went into an extreme deficit, maybe you cut your calories by over 500, you went from, you know, eating 15, 16, 17, 18, maybe 2000 calories, and you're all of a sudden down at 800 calories, your body is like, whoa, we need to survive. So it does what it can to make 800 calories all it needs to survive. So in the process of losing weight, a lot of times we lose muscle mass because muscle is metabolically costly and it requires a lot of energy to be maintained. So in that weight loss process and trying to see faster results, we end up losing as much muscle as we do fat. And then we're able to then function off the 800 calories. So even if you're like, well, I only increased my calories by a few hundred, you're going to start to gain weight. And often we don't go through the retraining process and slowly rebuild. We go from depriving ourselves, getting so hungry or hangry, as I like to say, and we create these metabolic adaptations, and then we end up overeating, and then we regain the fat. We don't regain the muscle because we haven't done anything to retrain our body or change our workout practices. And so ultimately, the next time we try and diet down, it becomes even harder because our body's already running off of less. And so we either have to go lower than 800 calories or we have to do something different. So if you've been struggling, you think, well, in the past, I've just really deprived myself of calories. Hey, I'm even depriving myself of calories and I'm not seeing results. This might be why. So one of the mindsets you're going to have to embrace is potentially eating more to lose. Okay. And this is going to be a retraining process. It's not going to happen overnight, which can mean we have to take that step back. And so the other mindset you might have to embrace is stepping off the scale because the scale isn't going to show you what you want to see. If you've ever thought, well, I've even made some changes and I'm losing inches, but I'm not losing weight in the scale and I have like 30 pounds to lose. How is this possible? Instead of seeing that as a bad thing, realize that is actually your metabolism healing itself. So if you're not seeing the scale change and you're losing inches, this is a good thing. Okay. This is you gaining muscle as you're even losing fat. And not only will you look leaner while staying the same weight, but eventually the pounds will come off, especially if you have 20, 30, 40 pounds to lose. But you need to regain that muscle to improve your metabolic health, which is why you might have to embrace the mindset of stepping off the scale or not even looking for it to change, especially not change quickly if you want to see results faster. Okay. So as weird as that sounds, because you're like, well, I'm not seeing results faster. You will actually see results faster. But sometimes we have to stop seeking that immediate gratification of the scale if we want to see the results that we want. And we have to go against what we've always done and embrace a new mindset of eating more. And I know this can be really challenging, especially when you think about the other practices we often want to implement. We turn to wanting to burn more calories, we do more cardio, but all these things we've done prior are why we're now struggling to see the results we want, as much as they seem to work at the time. They set us up for long-term failure. And if you think about it, I mean, the dieting industry wants you to do these things because then you come back for more programs, right? You only get out of the cycle if you change what you've always done. And that's a hard mindset to shift because to some extent those things did work. But I would ask you to step off the scale, embrace eating more, and really take that step back to say, hey, this might have seemed like it worked in the past, but did it really? And in seeing faster results, what issues did I now create that I now have to battle against? And the more that you embrace those things and take a look, the more you're going to realize that a lot of times when you were even making healthy habits, the reason you couldn't maintain them long term is because you were faking them. Okay. So I always like to say act as if over fake it till you make it, because I think fake it till you make it is why we end up not seeing the lasting results we want, the habit changes that we want, because we're faking habits. We're doing these things because it's a perfect time. We want to see fast results. We don't really assess who and what we are, our non-negotiables. We fake the habits because we think this is what we're supposed to be doing, over acting as if. And acting as if requires us to actually assess, what does the lifestyle of the person that has the results I want? What would my lifestyle look like if I had these results? What would truly be sustainable based on who and what I am? And when you act as if, instead of faking it till you make it, you create habits that build. It might be one small change that doesn't seem sexy, but that momentum and that, you know, even success at that one small change will make you want to do more. So again, it's even changing the mindset of going all in and the fake it till you make it to acting as if. What are the small changes I can do to act as if I have the results that I want? Because if you start acting as if, ultimately you'll end up acting as you are. And that's where those habits become something that we are not requiring ourselves to constantly try and force ourselves to maintain. They've truly become something that we have the discipline to do because they're so easy and almost unconscious at that point. That's what discipline is. It's creating habits that we can so ingrain that we're not requiring ourselves to use willpower to constantly maintain them. And that's why they stick when we're stressed out. So as hard as it is to go against the mindsets we've always had, go against the practices we've always had, if you want a new and better result, and especially if you're seeing or feeling like your age is fighting against you, hormones are fighting against you, really assess your previous dieting practices and the mindset you have with them and even your workout practices, and realize that a shift might be needed. I am super excited to be joined by RS coach Rachel to talk about eating more to lose fat. We have to go against some of those previous dieting practices that we've always implemented, slashing our calories super low, because those might actually be sabotaging our metabolic health and the results that we actually want to see. So thank you so much, Rachel, for joining me. I'm super excited to talk about this with you because I know you're very passionate about getting women to eat more and ultimately see the results they want.
I totally am.
And so when I was talking to you about this, it came up because of a few client situations we've had where we're really trying to encourage clients to make sure that they're fueling correctly to see the results they wanted. You mentioned your own experience with that, and I'd love to hear your story with learning to eat more to truly see the results that you wanted.
Yeah, I definitely approach it from a personal as well as scientific background. Probably, I guess, in 2019 is when I really started a conscientious and strategic reverse or increasing my calories slowly, because I had been kind of staying around the same in terms of my body composition, and my training wasn't really going, you know, it was going okay, but I wasn't really making as many gains as I thought that I could based on how hard I was working. And I was basically losing and gaining the same 5 pounds over and over again. And so a friend said to me, hey, why don't you actually suck it up and start to increase your calories over time? And of course, my first thought was, well, that's scary because I worked really hard to be at this weight. And the thought of increasing that on the scale was a little scary. But it definitely, when I took it on as a long-term project, it really paid off. And that was the first time, even after years of powerlifting and strength training, that I actually got my deadlift to over 300. So it definitely paid off. And for me, the process took probably around a year. And again, approaching it very slowly, 50 calorie increases every couple weeks, not being afraid to hang out in one place. And ultimately, I took my calories from around 1800 to around 2700. And basically, I ended the increases when I got to a point where I didn't really want to eat any more food.
You had retrained your body is basically the process that you were going through.
Absolutely. And I think where some people have gone wrong and where I went wrong in the past was that when I thought about increasing my calories, I just made a big jump, right? So if I was eating 1800, I would all of a sudden go to 22 or 23. The scale would go up a lot. You know, my gym performance would not go up, and then I would panic, and then I would just drop it right back or even create more of a deficit, which was creating this yo-yo effect. So instead, when I approached it really, you know, strategically long-term, small increments, as you mentioned, mentioned, it gives our bodies actually a chance to, you know, come, you know, to respond to the fuel. And I think what sometimes people, and in my case, what I definitely didn't understand was it's not kind of like a YOLO, right? Like where, oh, I'm going to have pizza and this and cookies and blah, blah, blah. It was, hey, it's small increases, and it's really not just eating everything that you want to as much as you want to, which was kind of a bummer.
Well, it's something where you're getting your body to utilize the extra fuel that you're giving it, not only to potentially be able to push harder in your workouts, but to build that lean muscle mass. And with building lean muscle mass, of course, you're going to see potentially the scale increase, not only from that lean muscle, but from all the things associated with it. So it is embracing seeing the scale go up and knowing that there's other ways to measure progress to see that body recomp, but truly understanding that it's not just that cheat day where you eat a ton and you eat whatever you want, because yes, of course, that's going to be stored, like water weight being stored from like inflammation and glycogen storage and sodium and all these other things. And it is going to be calories. Your body's like, I don't know what the heck to do with these. Okay, we'll store them as fat, right?
Right, exactly. And I think the most important thing was having a plan for my training, because what we need to do is we want to be putting those calories to good use, as you mentioned, increasing and really investing in muscle building. And so that's the best time to really be strategic with, you know, focusing on maybe some heavy lifting, some different goals in terms of, you know, whether that be, you know, more bench press or deadlift, or even can I do more push-ups? Anything along those lines, but we need to have that training going in concert with the increase in fuel so that, as you said, we can be maximizing those gains in terms of muscle.
And this will really improve our metabolic health, which is ultimately what we're after, because the more we can eat and the more we can fuel that lean muscle, the leaner we're going to ultimately stay more easily, and the functionally stronger and more fit we're going to be till our final day on this planet. But even knowing this, right, as you mentioned, it was a scary thought to increase your calories, especially when you potentially worked really hard to get down to your goal, right? So if someone's coming out of this weight loss phase, they've finally reached their goal, they know they need to do this, or they've realized their calories are super low and maybe they have plateaued, how would you help them start to get over that mental hurdle to embrace the changes they need to retrain their body to eat more so they can ultimately even look leaner over time?
I think, you know, for me, when I'm working with clients, and as you mentioned, a significant number of the folks that we're working with are actually working to eat more. I would say probably 40% of my current clients have a goal that we're actually slowly increasing. And the way I always approach that conversation is that this is an investment in long-term health and in increasing muscle mass, which, you know, as we can increase muscle mass, we increase our metabolism, which ultimately helps us lose fat in the long run. And, you know, as you said, what we really want to do, especially for women who are over 40, which I am, is that we actively need to be building muscle, because if we're not, then we're actively losing it through sarcopenia, especially when we're not eating enough. And so really trying to shift the paradigm and the conversation about this being an investment in long-term health and body composition, I think is so important. And also, like for me, having specific goals that are not related to body composition. So for me, with my competing background, that was easy because, you know, I could say I have a deadlift goal of this, or a bench press goal of this, but, you know, I would encourage everyone, hey, can we have other goals beyond just the scale or sizes, something beyond that? Because ultimately, we're not just our body composition, right? Like, we're awesome, strong, kick butt people who need to be celebrated and have goals that are beyond just the way that we look.
And even thinking about goals as your energy levels in everyday life, your ability to take on new challenges because you slept really well, right? You can set even some of those like lifestyle goals of how you want to feel in your everyday environment.
And I think that's one of the things that RS does really well, is the fact that we do encourage people to focus on some of those other things that probably we just don't pay attention to. And when someone prompts you about your sleep or your energy or your mood, and you can say like, oh yeah, I actually do feel better. I do sleep better. You know, I haven't snapped at my husband in, you know, 2 days, whatever that looks like. When we eat more, it tends to help us in a lot of different ways. And, you know, when we have more energy, we typically feel better and are nicer to be around.
It's true. When we're not hangry, that's always a good thing.
Exactly. Exactly.
Going back to that too, like I think so often like previous dieting practices, what we've always done, what the dieting industry tells you to do is create this extreme calorie deficit to lose faster. And that has resulted in the past in changes on the scale more quickly. But what we also don't recognize is that nothing works forever because our body is not the same forever. And so when we were younger, that might have worked too, because there are more optimal hormone environments. As when we're younger, like our body is like, yes, I want to grow stronger. I want to do these things, right? So we can have improper practices that do result in the end result we want, right? Our metabolic rate is naturally higher. But as we get older, as we even see those hormonal changes of perimenopause and menopause, we have to recognize that we're no longer dealing with the same optimal environment within our body. And so the more we implement some poopier dieting and training practices, the less we're going to see the results that we want. So therefore, undoing or going against what we've always done, as scary as that can be, is often really key.
Right. And I think sometimes people don't think about adding calories in, especially if they haven't reached their goal. You know, it's like, oh, well, I still have 10 pounds or whatever. And so people kind of think, oh, I just need to keep reducing calories and calories. But especially if you're on the lower end of body weight, if you're a petite woman or person, I guess, you know, if you're getting down to calories, you know, 1200, 1300, whatever, where do you go from there? You know, is the answer, and we were talking about this the other day, is it 800? Is it 600? Eventually you can't just safely do that. And so of course the answer is to, you have to go back up. And we can't live in a deficit forever. And one of the other things that, you know, I talk to clients about is if you've been in a deficit for a long time and you're starting to see that you can't stick with it, so you're binging more, you're not tracking, you're going way over, then now is the time to add back in. It doesn't have to be, I reached my goal now, then I can add it. It really is a tool as long-term parts of increasing metabolic health and in losing fat. You can't just take a straight shot to the bottom for most of us, especially if you're over 40.
Well, I mean, you hit on so many things there that I want to really like highlight. One, it doesn't have to be this straight deficit or straight surplus, right? You can go in waves. And if your body is telling you something, and this actually came up in the Facebook group where a client mentioned that she hasn't been able to really go into a long-term fat loss phase, even though she wants to lose fat. And, you know, this can be because of stresses in our life. It can be maybe the calorie intake is a little too low for other activity. Maybe it can be just, again, mentally, we don't necessarily have the motivation to go as intensely as we would like to see results. But I told her, I'm like, well, why not do the fat loss phase for the amount of time you seem mentally able to right now, the 2 weeks, and then come out of it for a week strategically. And I'm like, and then you can go back into it, right? There could be waves. And even in maintaining our results, and you could see it in her photos, even in maintaining her current results, she was seeing that body recomp happen, because maintaining isn't standing still. It's doing the habits that help create that set point. And as our body adjusts to that set point and even does build lean muscle while staying like seemingly still, you're increasing your metabolic rate, which will then help you lose fat even on the same amount of calories just because of that shift. So it's right. It's something that you don't have to take this one linear approach. And just because you're not at your goal doesn't mean that you shouldn't sort of allow things to ebb and flow to be able to be more consistent overall. So in terms of that, if someone is looking to, let's just say, you know, keep moving forward, but they're not as mentally motivated, how would you help them embrace the process of making some small changes or staying focused enough when they're not necessarily driving forward towards a fat loss phase, or they're even like, well, I don't really know about a performance goal right now. How would you help them find those habits that allow them to still see results and stay consistent enough when they're not as motivated?
I think for me, having a pair of pants is something, or some kind of article of clothing. And I would encourage, you know, for me, when I was going through increasing calories, I really went through periods of time where I didn't get on the scale, just because even though I know better, even though this is my job, even all of that stuff aside, watching the scale go up, even though it's, I mean, it's not like a straight climb, but you know, a couple pounds here, a couple pounds there, if panic. And so I definitely went for several weeks without getting on the scale. And that helped. And then having a pair of pants, in my case, it was a pair of jeans, can I still fit into these? And one thing that I noticed was over months and months and months, like the butt was tight, but the waist was not. I was like, all right, like that's okay. And so having, you know, some kind of measure in addition to, you know, maybe doing measurements or, you know, photos, those types of things, I think are really important. And then ultimately too, you know, just as you said, this isn't forever. This isn't something that you're going backwards. And really, you know, when I'm working with clients, I try to sell the negative on it. Like, hey, this is totally different. I actually had a new client a couple of weeks ago, and she really needs, because she's so active in her, you know, her outside life. I was like, hey, we really need to increase calories. And you could, you know, and she said, you know, up front, to her credit, like, hey, this sounds really hard. This is something I've never done before. And what I said to her was, hey, I bet if I told you you need to eat less, you'd be like, cool, got it. And so really, I'm telling clients up front and having a conversation, in many ways, increasing calories is harder than dropping if you're trying to create a deficit, because like you said, we've been told our whole lives from the diet industry that getting lower is better. And frankly, I think that the diet industry thrives on a diet isn't successful unless you're miserable. Like, how many of us have been like, I am so hungry, I'm so weak, I'm so whatever. And you're like, oh good, it must be working. You know, like when you tell people you can eat more food and feel good, it's almost like they just can't believe you. And that makes sense because we've been conditioned to believe that this is true.
And then we've done some of those practices which led to faster results on the scale for a variety of reasons, which most of the time aren't even fat loss being lost faster, right? And then in that, we say this worked, right? Because you did see results. However, you also have to step back and be like, did it actually work? Because you're looking for a new solution right now because it wasn't sustainable. So how can you find a way to make it sustainable? And even in going back to that, you said it's not forever. And I think so often, even in like overselling the negative, right? We also don't set end dates of like, hey, this might happen, this might happen, this might happen. All these things are not necessarily great, but I'm doing this experiment for X amount of time and then I'm going to reassess. And I think even that can help us trust in the process a little bit more. Like, hey, I'm bumping at 50 calories and I'm doing it for this long, knowing that no, results don't happen as fast as we'd like ever. But in sometimes giving ourselves that end date, we can trust in the process a little bit more and then make strategic decisions based on that. Like going back to your pants, right? The more ways we measure success, the more ways we can see our progress and our success. If we only rely on the scale, that's going to potentially hinder us from making the changes we need because the scale is going to go up. And the more it goes up, sometimes with building lean muscle, the more you might even have to increase your calories to keep seeing the same and better result. So with all that, I just brain vomited out at you. If someone was like trying to trust in the process, they set an end date, they sort of told themselves this is going to be a hard thing, what would be the first change you would have them make in this process of retraining their body to eat more?
First of all, if you're not tracking, gotta track. I think that's the most, you know, fundamental. I know we talked about this before, but really having an idea about your maintenance level of calories is a game changer, because when you have an idea about your maintenance, what it takes to kind of be in this stable area, it becomes way easier to either increase or to create a little bit more of a deficit when that time comes. So getting a baseline, and you know, I know that people are always eager to do it now, I want to start tomorrow, but investing maybe even up to a month of trying to see where you need to be to maintain your weight, if you're trying to think about this long term, is such a great place. And then you can kind of go back to that when you need to. And then from there, very small. So maybe, you know, depending on where your calories are, either, you know, 50 calories up or 100 calories up, and then assessing every 1 to 2 weeks, you know, using all of those measures that you just talked about. And then you increase again just a little bit. And so that becomes a long-term thing. And again, have a kind of a time frame here. Is this a 4-month process, which I would argue is probably the minimum you need to do in order to invest in this, depending on where your calories are starting from? Or is this something that you're willing to take on for a year or so, depending on where you want to end up? So have some strategic goals, have those bumpers in place where you're saying, I'm not going to panic, right? The scale's gone up 2 pounds. This isn't working. Oh my God, I'm going back to the other way. And so having somebody, I didn't have a coach at that time, but I had a really good friend who was, you know, in the industry, and she was like, don't panic. When you panic, tell me so that we can stay on course. So having a coach, if you can, 100% would recommend that, or somebody that you can say, hey, I'm feeling this way, and they can kind of talk you off the ledge. Because there was a lot of days that I stood on the ledge and being like, ah, the answer is 1600, you know, so have somebody in your corner.
Well, I mean, and even mentioning tracking, like having that data to know you're doing the right things can really help you trust in the process too. Because I think so often when we aren't tracking what we're doing, we don't see all the deviations maybe that add up, or the things that we aren't necessarily doing, or the things we can improve upon. And then we don't trust in the process more. And I would even highlight with calories, focus on those macros, focus on that protein. Even when you first start, make one change at a time. Like maybe, you know, you've been eating in more of an extreme macro breakdown to lose the weight. Maybe you go more to even thirds first to work in a few more foods. And then when you see that working, you bump your calories. Or if you're really comfortable in your macro breakdown, you say, hey, I'll trust in it more because I know this ratio really works for fat loss, you know, muscle retention, whatever else, body recomp. And then you bump your calories from there. By making only one change at a time, you can help yourself trust in the process. But give yourself those like boundaries, and instead of like trying to like take yourself like too far, light years outside your comfort zone, just start to push the comfort zone a little bit and give yourself those ways of checking in. It sounds like that's like the easiest way to ease in.
And you know, and as we talk about too, data is so powerful because, you know, research tells us that it takes, you know, approximately 3,000 extra calories to add a pound of fat. And so if we think about it, if we're just adding say 50 or 100 calories every few weeks and we're training hard, you know, the math just doesn't add up. So logically we can look at the data and say, I didn't eat 3,000 extra calories this week. And so that can help, you know, calm the irrational thoughts, at least for me. And the other part that I think a lot of times folks don't know because they're just not familiar with the science is that as we increase our calories, other things like NEAT, so our non-exercise activity thermogenesis, so the fidgeting we do, the standing instead of sitting, all of those things increase as well. And so it can help to moderate maybe some of the gain that would happen. It's a fascinating area of research. And that is a lot of the driver about increasing calories over time, is your body kind of does its best to burn those off. So it's really fascinating. And the body has a lot of ways to utilize more fuel effectively to help us reach our goals.
It's almost like making a checklist for yourself of, okay, I'm tracking, I'm increasing by this amount, I have this end date. I'm going to even make an effort to get up and move a little bit more throughout the day and be more active because I will feel energized. And then maybe even on the days you do the check-in, putting a checklist of, okay, what is my emotional state before I'm going to do this check-in? Because I know if we're upset or whatever else, we bring those emotions to whatever the weigh-in is. So on a day we might not be upset by seeing the scale go up. If we're in a bad mood, that can then make us upset with that. So maybe assessing your emotional state before you take some of your progress measurements, maybe even reminding yourself of the reasons why things could have gone up. Like, did you do a hard workout the night before? Did you eat more carbs late? Did you eat later? You know, like sort of doing that little self-assessment as we're gathering data to take the emotions out of that data. And again, remind ourselves, yes, I didn't eat 3,000 extra calories to end up having gained a pound. It's potentially all these other things can really help. So it's like the more you're going in prepared with a strategy and an end date, it sounds like the better off you're going to be.
100%. And I share with clients all the time, you know, my story, I came from, you know, in my early 20s, I was a long distance runner, you know, at 5'7", at my lowest, I was 112 pounds. I kind of floated around 120. I was on the small side of, you know, height to weight. And then now 20 years later, you know, my weight is typically around 140. So that's 20 pounds. And I tell clients, A, this, you know, that's why the scale isn't necessarily the best measure. And B, it took me a long time. It wasn't that I woke up one morning and all of a sudden I was 20 pounds heavier. It was years of building that. And so, you know, that can really be reassuring for people that you're not going to wake up one morning after increasing your calories and strength training and you're going to be 20 pounds heavier and look like Hulk. It's a long-term process, but one personally I have found immense value in.
A long-term process for better or for worse, because sometimes we want results yesterday, but at the same time, we do overestimate how much we can accomplish long-term, and we overestimate how much we can accomplish short-term and underestimate how much we can accomplish long-term. So putting in that work and staying consistent is super key. In terms of closing thoughts for anybody looking to retrain their body to fuel more, really making sure they're not hangry in everyday life and they're seeing the aesthetic results they want, the performance results they want, where would you have them start tomorrow? Just in closing thoughts.
I would say if you're not tracking, track, and then just 50 calories, and assess, as you said, have some strategic measurements in place, 50 calories, you know, every 1 to 2 weeks, see how you feel, and do not be afraid to hang for a minute. You don't have to necessarily increase and increase and increase. And I would definitely think too, just about where you want to be 10 years from now. Dr. Peter Attia, he's a guy in longevity, he's a physician, and he talks about your marginal decade. So the last 10 years of your life, where do you want to be? Meaning, what do you want to be doing? Where do you want to be living? All that kind of stuff. And then train for that, right? So thinking about when we're eating more fuel, when we're building more muscle, when we're increasing our energy, basically, these are all things that are investing in our older adulthood. And so I, you know, when I get frustrated or whatever, I think to myself, okay, when I'm 80, where do I want to be? And that can really make it a little bit more tangible that I'm investing today, just like a retirement account. I'm investing today so that when I'm not working or whatever, I have the ability to live the way I want to. And so treating our bodies that same way. We're making investments so that we can be hand gliding or skydiving. Why am I thinking about jumping out of planes? Let's not do that. The hiking, all those things that you want to do when you're older, playing with grandchildren. Make those investments today.
Well, I was thinking more about investing to be able to go kayaking and take the vacations I want, but jumping out of planes is 100% acceptable. But I love that way of phrasing it. You're investing in your future, but you're investing in your future from a nutrition, workout, like a health standpoint, not just a monetary standpoint.
Exactly. It's good.
Well, thank you so much, Rachel. That was super valuable information so that we can all focus on really fueling our body to move, feeling our best for not only the next decade, but hopefully a lot more decades.
Exactly.
So I want to share a delicious pre-workout smoothie that will really boost your metabolism. It's a great way to help you accelerate those fat loss results and even get more out of your training. Now, this isn't relying on caffeine. It isn't some quick fix, but it's a great way to make sure that you're hitting your macros in not only a delicious way, but a way that helps you get that little 1% boost in your metabolic rate. So it's the cherry apple fritter smoothie. Okay, in this smoothie, it's about 320 calories, 30 grams of protein, 32 carbs, and 8 grams of fat. The ingredients are 1 tablespoon ginger root, 1 scoop of greens powder, 1 serving vanilla protein powder, 2 cups of water, and 1/2 cup frozen sour cherries. If you want to add ice as well, that can help you blend it to the texture you want, but basically you're going to add all those ingredients with some extra ice to the blender and blend until smooth. So I want to tell you a little bit more about each of these ingredients. Ginger helps increase thermogenesis, so it helps you burn more calories. It also will promote feelings of fullness and improve blood sugar regulation. It reduces the amount of fat the gut absorbs and can also help decrease inflammation. The greens powder, which I use my apple fritter, provides not only caffeine from the green tea, which can increase your metabolic rate and increase fat burning. The little caffeine boost can also help you push a little bit harder in your workouts. And it's the most effective when consumed 1 to 2 hours before your workout. The greens powder also contains bromelain that increases metabolism by increasing the rate at which we burn fat. And it's also high in antioxidants, which are beneficial. The protein has a higher dietary induced thermogenesis compared to carbs and fat, which means you burn more calories just to consume and utilize it. It helps fuel your workouts, providing necessary energy and minimizes muscle tissue breakdown. It may sound counterintuitive, but when we work out, we're breaking down muscle fibers, and this is why we feel sore after workout. And so we need those protein and those essential amino acids to rebuild, which is why it's great to take some in before a workout. Consuming protein prior to your workout can ensure that your body gets all the amino acids it needs to repair quickly. And the tart cherries are high in antioxidants and polyphenols, and they help fight cellular damage and reduce inflammation. They provide pain relief from your workout and allow you to start your recovery before your workout. So I want to talk about how to build muscle, because often I say lift heavy, but there's so much more to it than that. And I want to talk about how you can really improve your muscle mass, because it is really metabolic magic. So in talking about building muscle, how do you truly build muscle? And the simple fact is, if it challenges you, it will change you. Now, with that, there are different ways you can drive muscle growth, and 3 main drivers of muscle growth that you can utilize. These three drivers are muscle tissue damage, mechanical tension, and metabolic stress. So these three different drivers need to be combined for the best results. It's why different types of movements, postures, ranges of motion, types of equipment, tempos all need to be used. And the same move can be used to drive growth in different ways by adjusting these variables. And through diversity of movement and using these different drivers, you can see better results faster by allowing you to more optimally even train an area, especially a stubborn area, 2 to 3 times a week. Because while some of these may make you more sore and allow you to lift heavier, so the muscle tissue damage moves, and they make you feel more worked, some allow you to still do work that leads to muscle hypertrophy while training more frequently. And those things are more reliant on metabolic stress. It's why combining the techniques over the course of the week can be really key. So let's go over what they are and what types of moves fall under each one. So starting with muscle tissue damage. These are compound moves done with challenging loads. They create more muscle tissue damage, which can drive muscle growth. If you break down muscle tissue and recover properly, your muscles should grow stronger and bigger in response. However, the more muscle tissue damage you create, the longer you have to rest before working the area again so that it actually recovers and rebuilds. So you don't want to be just training back to back when you're sore and breaking tissue down. Otherwise, if you're not letting your muscle rebuild and recover, you're constantly just tearing it down, and that will fight against all the hard work you're actually putting in. With these compound moves, you may work on maximal strength in that 1 to 5 rep range, or even work in the more traditional hypertrophy rep range or muscle gain rep range of 6 to 12 reps. More time under tension, and especially more of a focus on the eccentric, means more work for those muscles, okay? So moves that really create muscle tissue damage have moderate muscle activity, they have big ranges of motion, they have peak tension when the prime mover is lengthened. So if you want to think about when you're at the bottom of that squat, those muscles are lengthened, or when you're leaning over in a deadlift, you think about the hamstrings being stretched, that's where the most tension is on the muscle. And they often emphasize the eccentric or allow you to really emphasize the eccentric. And you might find that you get very, very sore from these moves. Okay. But those big compound lifts that you won't even start your workouts with create more muscle tissue damage. They require you to have a longer rest period to really recover from them. The next driver of muscle growth is mechanical tension, which means placing more tension on the muscle you want to work. It's one of the ways to do this is by using our mind-body connection to better recruit the muscle while also using the moves that place the most tension on the muscle when it's shortened. And this may allow us to actually create more tension on muscle with even lighter loads, which can be great, especially if you're rebuilding. Now, this doesn't mean you shouldn't still challenge yourself, but it does mean that instead of depending on the load to challenge a muscle, you need to focus on the muscle you feel working. So you got to ask yourself, what do I feel working? And try to activate it as much as possible with your mind. Because if you're doing like a hip thruster and you're only feeling your quads, you're not getting the benefit of like the move for your glutes that you really should be. So you want to think about contracting hard. These moves can be more isolated movements. So you might find that you find some isolated movements like cable abductions might even be one of these moves that create a lot of mechanical tension, but also more compound lifts like hip thrusters, okay? Even rows are a great example of something creating mechanical tension because you're gonna have the most tension on the muscle or feel the most load applied to the muscle when it's shortened, okay? So these moves generally don't take as long to recover from, usually 2 or 3 days, so a little less than the muscle tissue damage. And they're most often done in that 5 to 15 rep range, so they're not necessarily as often done for the maximal strength, although they can verge into that. The range of motion is still very important, and so are even the tools that you use with these moves. If you start to shrink the range of motion on some of these moves and you get into more of like those banded work with some of the exercises, so even a hip thruster that's double banded, you can start to even go into that metabolic stress territory, which is why it's so great that we can really use so many movements in a diversity of ways, okay, to see the full benefit. So when you're thinking mechanical tension, you want to think moves that create high muscle activity, moderate ranges of motion, and peak tension when the prime mover is shortened. So if you think about the top of the hip thrust, that's where you're going to have that most load on that muscle. You're going to feel the glutes really working. You can still emphasize the eccentric if you think about slowing that lower down. So the third driver of muscle growth is metabolic stress. And sometimes I find people either seek to do muscle tissue damage, make themselves constantly sore from the workouts, or they constantly feel like they have to have every movement really burn out or create a pump in an area. So when we're thinking metabolic stress, that's the pump and the burn, okay? And we don't want to just go to either extreme. We want to think about all the diversity that we can really include. So most of these moves, you will feel a lot at the time that you do them, but the next day you'll feel like you could even train again. So the recovery cycle is much shorter for metabolic stress movements, which can be key because it can allow you to train an area more frequently and get in that extra work when you've done maybe like a deadlift for your glutes and your hamstrings, but you want to work it 2 to 3 times a week to really see changes. So they can really also be a great way to improve your mind-body connection and also utilize that mind-body connection to see results. They're generally isolation exercises, and they're can be included in your prehab as activation, but also as like those isolation moves to burn out an area. And so while it might seem strange, because you might have noticed that I did note that these have low muscle activity, it's when you're going to feel that pump and the burn, because the pump isn't so much due to the activation just of the muscle, but also the fact that we're restricting blood flow to out of the muscle. So that restriction of blood flow is what creates that mind-body connection, okay? By keeping the muscle under constant tension with quick back-to-back reps, you prevent blood from leaving the muscle, and this makes the cells actually swell, and so you get that pump and that create that metabolic stress. And that burn, so while that is due to the buildup of metabolites that happens due to the constant tension, and especially when you're doing that, these moves for higher volume. So if you are like a runner or cyclist and you're more in that peak season and you're like, well, I want to keep working on strength, but I don't want to be sore, I don't want to be fatigued, you might not include as many heavy lifts, and you might start to go to moves that drive growth or help you maintain that muscle through metabolic stress. So this is also a way that you can recruit more muscle fibers due to fatigue. So if you think about like you want to recruit as many muscle fibers as you can, if you've done that heavy lift and then you include this after to really fully fatigue an area, you will recruit more muscle fibers because of that fatigue. And this can help you accelerate muscle growth when combined with that muscle tissue damage. So again, we want to utilize all three drivers as much as possible over the course of a week. This doesn't mean randomly stringing together workouts. You want to create that weekly progression because you want to be able to build. Otherwise, you are just going to make yourself constantly sore from the new. So by making sure that you're repeating that weekly progression, you will get less sore from those muscle tissue damage movements, which will allow you to lift more. But going back to the metabolic stress, moves that really create this, they have low muscle activity. They have small ranges of motion. They have peak tension, like when the glutes or a muscle is shortened, very tension on the muscle throughout. So like you can often see banded work with this, and they create that pump or burn. So just remember, a diversity is really key if you want to see the best results. Not only do you want to use these different drivers of muscle growth, but we want to vary how we use them. We don't want to be using random moves on random days. We want a diversity of movements, but we want to make sure that we have that set weekly progression that we repeat. Again, that's really key to see that progressive overload and see those small incremental changes in growth. Because if you're randomly stringing together moves and you do deadlift on one day and deadlift on a completely other day after different moves, you might not know if you're actually able to lift more because you might be fatigued from other movements. So don't just seek to feel like every workout was hard or that you're constantly sore. Really focus on that intentionality with your training. Focus on building up each week and using different moves and feelings of movements over your progressions to even create growth in different ways. So I hope this really helped clarify the ways that you're driving growth, because I know a lot of times it can feel like, well, I don't have heavier loads or I don't have this. There are so many opportunities and different ways to design your workouts to see those maximal muscle gains, even when you can't just lift heavy. Although that is a key component, we want to use the diversity to our advantage. Well, that's a wrap for this episode of the Fitness Hacks Podcast. I really hope that you're focusing on those muscle gains, fueling them by eating more and training intentionally, because muscle really is metabolic magic, and we want to improve our metabolic health to stay lean and strong till our final day on this planet.